Success stories and interviews with game changers and thought leaders who have overcome both in life and in business. Welcome to Vertical Momentum.
Hey guys, welcome back to Vertical Momentum. I am your host, Richard Kaufman, also known as the Comeback Coach. Guys, this is going to be a fun episode, but it's going to be a very serious episode at the same time. We're going to have one of my friends. We just became friends, and I'm blessed to have him in my life. He's coming out with a brand new movie out this week called We Got Your Six. So that should be coming out. We're going to talk about it. Danny, what's up, my brother?
Hey, Richard. How you doing, man?
Oh, man. Every day is a good day. I'm above ground. How about you guys?
We're doing great. Doing great. Really excited about the movie having its world premiere this week. Thursday at the film festival called Prize Fest. If you want to watch the movies online and vote for best film, you can go to prizefest.org/film and get an online ticket.
All right. So let's learn a little bit about you. Where are you from? Where did you grow up? And what kind of little kid was Danny?
I grew up in Buffalo, New York. And when I was about 13, my father, he was laid off for a few years at General Motors. And when I was 13, they offered him his job back if we moved down to Shreveport. So that's where I moved, to Shreveport, Louisiana. As far as being a kid, you know, it's just normal kid. I love playing sports. I love playing Army. I always knew I was going to be in the military. Everybody knew I was going to be in the military. And then when I played some sports in junior high and high school, football and track. And then when I turned 17, after my junior year in high school, I joined the Army National Guard. I went to basic training the summer after my junior year, and I came back, finished my senior year in high school, and then went back and finished my infantry training at Fort Benning, Georgia in 1990.
So I love to hear people's recruiting stories. Talk to us about your recruiting story.
Mine was actually very simple. I'm the one that hunted down the recruiter and, you know, I can't wait to go. I can't wait to go to basic training and stuff, all that. So it was actually him telling me, okay, calm down these things. Cause I'm 17 years old. I'm thinking, you know, I'm going to walk in the office and, you know, raise my right hand and I get my orders. And he's going, no, this takes a couple weeks, you know, calm down. But that's when I went National Guard. In 1993, I decided to go back to active duty, and I was on active duty for about 11 years.
So out of everything you could have picked, why infantry?
That's every member of my family that's been in the military has always been in combat arms. My grandfather, he came over from Italy. He joined the Marines and went, you know, infantry. So this just kind of felt like that's what I should do. But that's also, that's the job that, you know, you always see the hard life, the challenges. And I grew up as someone that really tried to challenge myself all the time. And the infantry day again, I'm sure did that. I'll tell you that.
Now, did you ever think about going, you know, Ranger or anything like that?
Yeah, so I wanted to be in a mortar, and mortars are very difficult to get Ranger school because in the Army, they think only 11 Bravos, which is, you know, straight riflemen, should go to Ranger school. Matter of fact, my 11 years active duty, I only met five 11 Charlie mortars that actually had the Ranger tab, and two of them, when they got the Ranger tab, were switched back to 11 Bravo. So I did try out for Special Forces, and I passed the physical fitness test. I passed all the tests, and right before I was to report to selection, I got kicked out of the infantry. My last couple years, I spent doing another job because they said I lost too much hearing in my right ear. So when they did an MMRB on me, what's called MMRB, Medical Review Board, the recruiter said that he had to pull my packet because he couldn't justify sending me to Special Forces. They couldn't keep me in the infantry. So I did try for that, and unfortunately it didn't work out the way I planned. So, you know, there's that.
Well, unfortunately, you know, like Mike Tyson says, everybody's got to plan it so you get punched in the mouth.
Oh, yeah. Yep, absolutely.
So you traveled all over the world. You were deployed multiple places, correct?
Yes. Yeah, I served combat tours in Desert Storm and Iraqi Freedom. And then I was also at hostile tours in Panama, Bosnia, and Korea. And then when I got out, I worked as a contractor, as a diplomatic bodyguard for the State Department and a presidential bodyguard as well. I did 18 months in Afghanistan and 5 years in Iraq.
So now, how many years did you do total in the military?
11 active duty and 6 in the National Guard and Reserves.
So why, you know, if you're looking at probably, what, 17 years?
Yes.
You know, usually in the military, we know that once you hit your 10-year mark, you might as well do the full bitch. If you're
going to
do 10, you might as well do 20.
Yeah.
So what was your thought process in getting out?
Well, so when I got out of active duty, I went back into the National Guard, but my National Guard unit was in Washington. It was a specialized unit that they were sending hackers out to the field, but they're bringing, you know, 11 Bravos to guard, to, you know, guide them. It was just stuff that we were experimenting with in Afghanistan. Well, I was working overseas and I lived down here, and I would just fly up there for drill. And I was trying to get my my reenlistment done for my last 3 years, and it wasn't done in time. So I wound up being honorably discharged out of the National Guard, and then it was trying to get back in that. You just ran into difficulties once you're out at that point. And I think it's kind of like the military doesn't want to pay you retirement. So I think that had something to do with it, but I couldn't, I was trying to get back in after I had been released. So, and plus I was still working in Iraq at that time too. And a lot of units weren't accepting people that couldn't make each drill.
Now, you know, once you got out, you're working for, you know, contracting. When you finally stopped contracting, did you know something was a little bit off mentally?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. If you knocked on my door and I'm not expecting anybody, I'm going to answer the door, but I'm going to have a gun behind that door. And it was stuff like that. You know, driving down the road and there's only one trash bag on the side of the road. So I would drive in the oncoming, in the opposite lane, obviously safely with, you know, without causing an accident, but because I think that's a roadside bomb in there or something like that. There's also a ringtone on iPhones that sounds a lot like we call it the CRAM. It stands for Counter Rocket and Mortar Alarm. It sounds extremely close to that. And some people have that as a ringtone, and the second I hear that, I automatically think we're getting a rocket attack. And then I stop and think, well, last time Shreveport had a rocket attack was in 1864. So, you know, I think I'm pretty safe. But, yeah, it definitely took adjusting and getting used to it.
Now, a lot of, like myself, have post-traumatic PTS. And, unfortunately, it led me to the bottom of a liquor store. On the bottom of a liquor bottle. Did you struggle with anything like that?
Not really. And that's, I mean, I still kept the whole, just like in the military, every Friday is our night, everybody gets drunk. One of my things was, I still, and even to this day, I still wake up, I start PT at 06, you know, and I work out. Right now with a back injury I got from being a police officer, it's not as intense as I used to. I think one of the things that I did is I always kept myself busy. And that was the main thing. Like, you know, when I came back, I did the bodybuilding circuit for a while. You know, I made candles and soaps, anything. I just kept my mind busy because I noticed that when I didn't, then I started falling into depressed mood and maybe wanted to have a drink and then maybe start drinking earlier and earlier. And I would even go to a point that, you know, okay, if I'm going to drink today, I can't drink before 4 o'clock because I was afraid of, you know, having alcohol problems. So, you know, but I think maintaining a busy schedule, maintaining the dedication to working out in the gym every day is something that prevented that me from that happening to me.
Now, how did you get into the acting field?
That's actually a very funny story. I wound up taking a couple of civilian SEER schools. SEER stands for Survival, Evasion, Resistance, and Escape. And what the idea of the school is that if you get captured, it teaches you how to evade or escape, get out of restraints and stuff like that, handcuffs or rope, getting tied up with rope, teaches you how to get out of that. It teaches you how to evade getting captured, but then ultimately how to handle being questioned if you are ever captured. I went to a civilian one, civilian wilderness school, and then a civilian urban SEER school. And when you're getting questioned, they really do slap you around. They tased us. You know, we're handcuffed to a tree. It's like one of them, the wilderness one, it was in March, and we were in Arkansas. It was pretty cold, and the first thing they did is spray me down with water, just keep me cold and stuff like that. Well, I passed, but I could even tell. I couldn't tell a lie very well. So I got into acting in order to be able to tell a convincing lie in case I ever got captured. And I just wound up being pretty good at it.
So talk to us about, is it easy to start learning how to be an actor? Is it a big field? Is there a lot of people that are doing it now?
Oh, yeah, there's definitely a lot of people. And I, you know, get auditions all the time. And, you know, and I've done auditions for Walking Dead. I've done auditions for Marvel. I've done auditions where for scenes with like Tom Cruise and stuff like that. But it's so saturated, you know, so many people out there that it's just hard to get casted. I mean, they're only looking for the best, you know, so, and sometimes it comes down to how you look, how tall you are, what your body frame is like, stuff like that. So it's different because it's something I've never done before. So I think I was able to immerse myself in it, trying to learn as much as I can. But you are literally, you know, taking on another character that's besides your own personality. And there's a lot of memorizing lines, you know, that, you know, you really have to do. For this last movie, I think each one of our monologues was like 2 minutes long. And, you know, as a character, that's just one monologue. You got to memorize the entire scene. Plus, you got to memorize everyone else's lines so you know when to start talking, when you know when they end their lines and when it's your turn to say something. So it's challenging. I'll definitely say that. It definitely works on your memory skills.
So, because I know a lot of people who have PTS, including me, I have a traumatic brain injury. So what are some tricks that you've been taught to learn stuff, even if you have some PTS issues?
So one of the things that, and for whatever reason, I've always been able to remember lines pretty quickly. What I've always done is if I told you a joke today, one time, you're probably going to remember that joke. Or if I tell you a story one time today, you know, you're going to walk away remembering 90% of the story. So when you're looking at your script, remember, you are telling a story. You're telling a conversation. When we get done talking today, you're going to walk away remembering most of this conversation. It's the same thing. A lot of times people just hemmed up on the fact that they're looking at a bunch of words on a paper. And one thing I found out is if I look at the script and then I put it away and I don't allow myself to touch it, I tend to realize that I remembered a lot more than I thought I would off of that. And that's because you are telling a story or you are, you know, remembering a conversation that you're having. And that's one trick. If you look at it like that, stop being intimidated by all the words on the paper. Just kind of look at it that, you know, you're telling a story.
Is Rafe there?
Oh, Rafe.
Rafe, is Rafe there?
He's connected.
Oh, hey. What's going on, brother?
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, I hear
you. Oh, cool. How's it going? Charlie. Hello?
Yeah, we hear you.
Cool. Hey, thanks for having me on.
No, it's my pleasure. So how are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm having trying to work through some audio issues. It seemed good for the last 5 minutes, but I was breaking up for a little bit. So hopefully we'll be good. I'm doing pretty good.
So tell us a little bit about you.
Well, I'm down in Nashville, Tennessee right now, just coming off a little mini tour. Kind of just trying out the whole musician life and seeing how it works out for me. And I was really excited when I got the opportunity to write for that film. And I think we wrote a song that's really cool. And I was happy that I could help help out in that kind of cause, because I definitely have a family that is, you know, my entire family is based around or founded on people that were in the military. Not so much anymore. I don't have a whole lot of, I have a few cousins that are in the military, but, you know, both my grandfathers are both in World War II. One was in the Pacific and one was in Europe, you know. So yeah,
what kind of music do you play?
Oh, I play country, rock, a little bit of folk. Kind of all of the above. It's kind of coming together into like its own little genre from the stuff we cut this week. We did 3 songs this week, and it's all kind of groovy, kind of Chris Stapleton crossed with John Mayer, crossed with Delbert McClinton, kind of a groovy genre of its own. So,
I'm a big Chris Stapleton guy. I just love his voice. There's something
he's a
legend. And you know, one thing I love about country music is I love the storytellers. You know, that's one. You know, that's why I'm a big Travis Tritt guy. You know, I love old storytellers. So what was it, the song that you wrote for this for the score?
It's called A Place to Fall. And I sat down to write that song. I think it was a lot of themes that I'd kind of had in the back of my mind, and they kind of all came out at once. I would say it was about 50% that and 50%, you know, the fact that I had just watched the short film and then wrote it. And so it was kind of fresh in my mind. And I think really the line in the song that the film, I guess, really brought out was, you'd never even understand. And that was kind of the premise upon which I wrote the song, was because a lot of people would never understand, and they really just don't get it. And I would count myself among those people, because I've never been in the military. I've never had shots fired at me. I've never lived that life, but there's people that I'm very, very close to that have. And you can tell just from talking to those people that you'd never understand unless you're in their shoes. And so
So how did you feel after watching the movie? Now, did you watch the movie first and then write the song?
I did. Yeah. Actually, I think I wrote the song pretty shortly after I watched the movie. I sat down a Zoom call with Emma. She's a girl who's singing it. And very shortly after I watched it, probably a half hour, an hour after I watched it.
And what did you get out of the movie? What touched your soul?
I think it was really just a whole bunch of different experiences, and everybody shared their story. And it kind of goes to show how, you know, people have this picture that they have of being in the military, and they kind of paint it with this broad brush, and they think, well, this is what happens, and, you know, this is the thing, these are the types of things that cause PTS, and these are the types of things that, you know, you're going to experience if you're on the battlefield. And really, it's such a broader spectrum of things that could potentially affect you down the road mentally. And that's really what I guess I learned from the movie too. Things you wouldn't really think could affect you are the things that, you know, you just can't get out of your head, and that people don't really understand unless, like I said, they're the ones living it, you know?
Yep. Resiliency is a lot of people don't understand it and how important it can be. Right. So Danny, talk to us about what the process was and why you thought you should write your own movie.
Well, I've actually been writing my own movies for a couple years. One of the reasons why is because I always get casted as either a cop or a serial killer. There was like zero in between. So what I had to do to let other directors and other actors see me as other characters that I started writing my own movies. So this one, I actually wrote a while back, and I didn't plan on using it ever because it's just extremely emotional. But then back in February, I had two more of my brothers that I served with. They killed themselves 2 weeks between each other. And they knew each other. So, you know, the one, you know, knew that the other just killed himself. And 2 weeks later, he killed himself. And as the group was still mourning one, we had a second one. And I said, well, you know, I have to do something. And as an actor, you know, you have an obligation to tell the story that people need to hear. So that's why, you know, I did this story, which is basically about four troubled veterans as they embark on experimental type of group counseling. And as Rafe had mentioned, each one tells their own story. As I mentioned before, they each has a monologue, and it kind of goes into detail, and it shows two things, or the objective was to show two things to civilians that that haven't served. It kind of shows, you know, when you're talking to a veteran, he or she might be all happy and go lucky and whatever, but those are the thoughts in the back of their head that they can't get rid of. But the other objective of the story is that for us veterans, we need to police up our own. If we're expecting the VA to do it, well, you can keep waiting. We have to police up our own, check on each other, make sure everybody's okay. You know, if you need to talk to someone, talk to them. That, you know, asking for help is not a sign of weakness, it's a sign of strength. And I hear it's different now than when you and I were in, Rich. When we were in, if you tried to go to mental health, you had your clearance taken away, you know, no one wanted to work with you because you had mental issues, you know, you're barred from reenlistment, you're barred from promotion, you're barred from banned any favorable activity. And now I'm hearing that it's not like that, you know. So if you need help, ask for help, get fixed, and then come back stronger, you know.
You know, and I love that. Now, I've had a plenty of female veterans on, because first thing when a person say veteran, first thing you think of is male,
right?
But now we have so many females that are struggling with regular PTS, and then a lot of them now this is just statistics from last year, 20,000 veterans filed complaints for sexual assault.
Yep.
Knowing that only 10% file, think of that number. That's a crazy number.
That is. But
also think that out of those 20,000, 7,000 were men, and only 1% of men report. So now, how was it talking to a female veteran and getting their perspectives on PTS?
So when I, some of the stories are mine and some were donated. And I did change up names and stuff like that. Unfortunately, when I wrote this story, I found it incredibly difficult to get people to, because everyone says, yes, you know, I want to donate a story, I want my story told. But I guess thinking about the story made them, you know, anxious, whatever. And I didn't get as many as I wanted. That's why I don't have any stories from females. I do have a female actress that plays a veteran, and she tells a story that was actually donated to me by a male, but it has to deal with a child. And, you know, I realized when I was actually typing out the monologues that I had thought that if I get some stories from veterans, it won't be as bad as, you know, writing down one of my own. Come to find out, it's about the same, because, you know, there's similar, we all have extremely similar experiences. So I found out that it still bothered me just the same when I was putting that on paper. But as far as getting stories from female veterans, I did not. I reached out to as many as I could, but I did not get any stories from females.
Now, obviously, making movies can be very expensive. So, did you pay for all this stuff yourself?
I was actually able to raise $1,200, which was about half of what I needed. That's not usually, like, my first movie I made, which was back in 2018, it was called Warrior Spirit. And that dealt with a veteran dealing with his PTSD through boxing. When there's a cool little twist at the end, but that cost about $10,000. I was able to get a lot of volunteers this time that I didn't have to pay as much of my own money, but it usually goes, depending on what all you're trying to do, it'll go between $3,000 to about $10,000. But so about half of that came out of my own pocket. Yeah.
So now how long is the movie in total?
So the one for this film festival, which has to be no longer than 15 minutes, we're going to release on November 1st, we're going to release a longer version that's about 23 minutes, and that's really the whole movie. For this, to make 15 minutes for this film festival, we had to cut out a scene and where the counselor goes in to talk to the director, and he gets briefed on the experiment and each one of the veterans. Well, we had to cut that scene completely, go straight to the counseling session, and we did a flashback of the background of each veteran. As the counselor said his name, it flashes back to when the director is briefing him on the veterans and their backgrounds.
So now, when is it? How do we find it? How can we support your mission? What you got going on?
So besides getting a ticket to view online at prizefest.org/film, on November 1st, it'll be on Vimeo. We're going to release it, the longer version, the 23-minute version, to public, and it will be free of charge. This is something that I really want everybody to watch. That's why I'm on November 1st, I'm going to make it free. The reason why I'm pushing the film festival is that there is a $25,000 grand prize. And if I do win the grand prize, I'm going to, after I pay off my cast and crew, I'm donating the money to two of the local nonprofit organizations that help veterans with PTSD. One is called the Every Warrior Network, and the other is called Woody's Home for Vets. And both help local veterans deal with PTSD in this area.
Okay, so I want to find out on the same day that it releases. So what day is the first release?
Right now you can watch online, like I said, prizefest.org/film. You can watch online, and then you have to watch all 20 films. They're all short films. The longest film is 15 minutes. So they're all short films. And then you can vote for the best movie, best actor, best actress.
And when would you want this promoted?
As soon as possible. But again, we're going to be releasing the longer version on November 1st. And again, the movie is called We Got Your Six. So if you type that in Vimeo, you can watch that on November 1st. And that'll be the longer version.
Okay, so that will probably do so I can hype it up for a while before ahead of time, sure. So we can get people excited about it. You know?
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. Now, the online version for the festival, the online portion of the festival, that starts today and ends Saturday at midnight.
Okay, so, Raph, how can we support you, brother?
You know, man, just gives many people to watch the movie. I think we've got a killer song, and it's an awesome movie, and I think the more people that watch it and listen to the music, the more people we can reach, the better, you know. But as far as my own personal music endeavors, I'm on Instagram at Rafe Carlson, R-A-F-E Carlson, and that's kind of my home base. for all the stuff I'm doing. So I'm kind of touring the country right now, little trips here and there. So lots of live music, lots of new releases coming out. So stay tuned, right. And should be fun.
All right, guys, it's been a pleasure. I appreciate you guys. We're going to get this pushed out so we can save as many lives as possible. Guys, if you're listening to this, definitely check it out. We got your six, because that's one of my favorite sayings of all time. And I always tell everybody, I got your six, and I actually do. I'll actually pick up the phone when a lot of people won't. So, guys, thank you so much for what you're doing. Thank you for everything. Thank you for changing lives. Even if you save one life, it's changing the world.
Absolutely. All right, guys. Thank you.
Have an amazing night.
You too. And shout out to Danny for putting this whole thing together. It was awesome. Dan. I'm glad I got to work on it.
Thanks so much for having us, Rich.
Another Italian boy doing a good thing. All right, guys. Have a great night.
Thanks, you guys. See ya.
Thank you for joining us today. Please hit subscribe and share. Please feel free to leave us a comment.